Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it is Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I've been promoting this show for a while, this particular episode. I've been talking about this particular episode. I've been bragging about this particular episode. I can't wait to get to it. It's basketball, 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 basketball. My obsession, my love. Gets me through life, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not apologizing for it anymore. I am who I am. I'm almost 70 years old, distinguished guest, and I've been following basketball since 1966. My love for the game grows. I'm not one of those old guys who watches the clips. Good big day, these kids. No. I love it more and more. I don't know why. I think because life is so violent and filled with hate, and there's just so much unspeakable horrors in the world that I just need that break. And basketball gives me that break. As such, sometimes it's comic. Last night at the Bulls game, I went with my dear friend Norm. Shout out Norm. We had a great time. Bulls lost to the Knicks. It was a complete joke. There were so many like blunders in that game that the Bulls committed, my beloved Chicago Bulls, that yes, distinguished guest, I have season tickets to with my guys on the bowling team. Just let's pause and think about that. And we up for next year. So let's just get that out of the way real fast. Okay, so we're watching this game. Torrey Craig of the Bulls has a steal. He's got a breakaway to the basket. All he has to do is lay it in. They don't give you, I'm going to go old school here. They don't give you extra points for a dunk. Just saying this to my distinguished guest who knows the game. I've never seen a basketball game in over 60 years of watching it where the scorekeepers go, you know, we're going to give them an extra point because that was a really clever dunk. No, all he gets to do, lay it up. We're down by 7. It cuts it to 5. A little momentum. What does he do? He throws the ball off the glass. And clearly he was trying to do it like a LeBron thing. LeBron does it sometimes. I also saw him out at the skinny center for Oklahoma, blanking on his name. Looks like an old jazz hipster musician from California in the 1950s with his little goatee he's got going. Anyway, I saw this guy, Holmgren. I saw him do it. Throws it off the glass, and then he's going to catch it and dunk it. Well, Andre Drummond, who is trailing the play, to his credit, was hustling back in case Torrey Craig missed it so he could get the rebound and put it back. I guess he thought that the ball was thrown off the glass for him. So he went to get the ball and dunk it in, collides with Torrey Craig in midair. The ball drops to the floor. The Knicks get the ball. Bulls don't get any points. The Knicks rush it back. Andre Drummond, again to his credit, running back to position himself for defense, going up for the rebound, lands on a Knicks foot. And I think he really twisted his ankle. I mean, it was so bad that a wheelchair had to take him off the court. I mean, it went from comedy to tragedy in a second. I'm like, that's, can I get a refund on those season tickets? Oh my God. Damn Bulls. All right. That's my beloved Chicago Bulls. What can I tell you, ladies and gentlemen? That happened last night. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce herself. And then we're going to take the deep dive on my beloved sport of basketball. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
I am DeFron Smart, and I am probably just as big of a basketball fan as Mr. J. And that's how I'm going to intro myself, a beloved Chicago sports basketball fan. I still think we are the new mecca of basketball, and that's how I like to start it. I think obviously there are a few choices as the mecca. Some people will, Canada, Indiana, what we know, New York kind of gets the true name for it, but I feel like Chicago is the new mecca of basketball.
Wow, that could be a whole show.
Yeah, it's been a thought of mine for a long time, especially when the McDonald's All-American game decided to kind of make us a host city. I think it was a testament of not only, like, I think sometimes people use the Mecca as where the best players are. And for me, I think it's where basketball is life and is culture. And that's why Indiana kind of gets a little bit of love, but no one really cares and loves basketball as much as Chicago folks, even with the bad Bulls. Like, we just, it's something about when we got an orange ball and two teams, we get really excited for it. So,
all right. So DeFrance is being a little modest. And every time she comes on the show, I feel compelled to offer this introduction for her. First time I saw DeFrance Smart was, I could do it a year, 2006. You were a sophomore. It was at the DePaul gym. You were a sophomore starting point guard for Whitney Young, and Amanda Thompson was a power forward center. I'm not quite sure what position she played. But it was just dynamic basketball, in my humble opinion, the best point guard to come out of the city of Chicago in the 21st century. There, I said it. I say it every time. I love you, Derrick Rose. I love you, Patrick Beverly, Sharon Collins. But my book, it's DeFrance Smart. I saw her play a lot of basketball. Anyway, she's now our show's resident expert on basketball. So,
I'll take that. I will greatly, greatly accept that title.
All right. So the last time you were on the show, we did a whole breakdown. It was about a year ago. God damn, time's flying. And we did the Caitlin versus Angel episode. We just broke down the whole Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese debate, LSU, Iowa. That was a ferocious debate from last year's Final Four, Women's March Madness. This year, that particular debate did not occur. It wasn't personalized by those two women. But ramifications of the Caitlin Clark debate continue. So we'll get into more the update of the Caitlin Clark debate. I don't know if you saw this, but Ice Cube offered her $5 million to play a 3-on-3. We're going to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Because if I were her advisor, I'd say take the money. All right. We'll start with this larger general point that you raised before we went on the mic. And this is so clear. Everyone's been saying it. The state of women's basketball is stronger, healthier, more vibrant, more exciting. The game, the college game, this is me speaking, and I think you agree with me, is stronger right now than the men's game. It's definitely more popular. It's killing the men's game in the ratings. The Sunday championship game, DeFrance, even though it was an afternoon game, I had to go be at a baby shower watching on a phone. Okay. that's loyally my dear friend. Outdrew the men's. So what's going on here? Try to explain to our listeners why the women's game has accelerated past the men's game.
Yeah, coming back to that point, it was 18.9 million viewers for the women's game versus 14.8 for the men's game on a Monday night game versus a Sunday at 2 game. We spoke about it last year, and for me, the NCAA kind of fails in 2020. Really started the opportunity for women to have the resources and the huge media attention that they deserve. So what happened at that point, the NCAA had to invest about 14, or they invested 14 million into the women's sport. After, and viewers don't, or listeners don't understand, in 2020 when we came back from, or 2021 when we came back from the bubble, the NCAA basically got ripped into because they had a lower standard of care and attention to the women's game in terms of facilities, bags, just in general how they cared about the women. And so they got hit kind of with a discriminatory lawsuit and basically said, like, you need to make things equal. And so since that point, in addition to the rampant stars of Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, I would even throw in just Dawn as an entity, Dawn Staley, the women's basketball coach at South Carolina. We've just seen a lot more attention really starting to come towards women's basketball. And I firmly believe it was just a great time for people to finally get the chance to broadcast women's sports. And in addition to the three-point line has kind of neutralized the game. Coming back to your point in the beginning of this broadcast, no one really cares about dunks anymore. Like, the three-point contest in the NBA All-Star game is the highlight of the All-Star game, which I don't think anyone would have ever thought that that would be. But it has surpassed the dunk contest. We've actually talked about how can we get rid of the dunk contest, which I don't think anyone would have imagined 20 years ago. So it's become an equalizer. In addition to, the women's game has found a lot of stars. And the moves and the step back threes that we see that were glorified on the NBA level are the same moves that everyone's making from biddy ball until to college. So the games look the same. In addition to, we've seen an increase in the amount of money that we're throwing towards women's sports, which should have been around a long time ago. It's not like we're not seeing stars at the same caliber that we saw in the past. It's just they're getting the amount of attention that they deserve. And they also can broadcast and kind of amplify their own game and sport using social media. So that's what, those are some key points of mine.
Yeah, that you're so right about the step back three. I don't recall, I mean, memory is a funny thing. I don't recall a mid 2000s when you were just starting to play high school basketball, the step back three being as prevalent as it is now. I view that as something that within the last 10 years. Is my memory fuzzy on that, or is that
accurate? No, I think this, we would have to say who gets credit for it. I would say James Harden would take credit for the step back three, which is what we call like a space creator. It's not just a step back. It's a sidestep and a step back. So it gives an opportunity for people to get shots off a lot quicker. And then the range, right? Caitlin has gotten so much attention, and that's kind of the Steph Curry effect. So it's 2 points of the 3-point line on the 3-point shot. Steph with the range, and then Harden with the step back. So those two have just really changed the game, and we're seeing big shoot threes. Another point that was a hit on the women's game where the scores were too low. And so now that we see an oversaturation of like 3-pointers attempts in the past 5-10 years, we're seeing scores go up. And so no longer can we say like, oh, we don't care about the women's game. They don't dunk, nor the scores aren't good. The talent isn't there. that's all gone. That's been erased. And so now you really get an opportunity to see some really good basketball and some really good talent.
Well, I agree with you that the dunk contest has become a cliche. And the best players in the NBA don't want to do it because they don't want to get injured. And I don't blame them. And so it's just faded. I was thinking about this, talking about this at the game last night. I watched on Instagram Luka Doncic hit this shot where Luka Doncic plays for Dallas Mavericks. I'm not making this up, DeFrance. You may have seen he bounced the ball on the floor. It hit the scoreboard and ricocheted down and got the basket. Now, I can't remember if it got the basket right through the basket or if it bounced again and then went through. I can't remember. I just know it got it. It was unbelievable. I've watched it. I couldn't believe that a man could do that. First of all, to bounce the ball so hard that it hits the scoreboard and then falls to the floor with any accuracy. I've seen Steph Curry do these shots from the tunnel. So the tunnel, throwing it across the court and going in. And that's what I just said to my friends. We got to bring horse. Let's bring horse back. And let's have horse at the All-Star game, H-O-R-S-E. We all played it as kids. It's how a lot of kids get introduced to the game of basketball. I just think you could have men and women competing against each other. I would love to see Doncic versus, even if it's just one-on-one, Doncic versus Steph Curry would be unbelievable horse game.
Yeah, they were talking about bringing one-on-one back as well. Bringing not back, but bringing one-on-one to the NBA All-Star game. And I forgot, it was like limited dribbles. And then the winner, it wasn't necessarily like revenue. It wasn't a purse. It was if you win, then you get to elect if your team has like home court during the playoffs. It was something that was important to the playoffs. That's something that, you know, the players would care about. It just wouldn't be a nonchalant, like, we're just here for media presence. I'm glad that we're going back to the old format of East versus West. I think I got tired of seeing the hand-selected, the curated, you're my homie, or I don't like you. Yeah, it's just give me a very traditional East versus West, and let's keep it moving. But no, I'm excited to see now what, like, I think another thing that came up with the women's game, we were trying to place Caitlin Clark in the list of greats and goats. And they came back to the question of, does the GOAT have to have a championship? And I think we all know that answer. Yes. Like, you have to have at least one. And so what she's done for the game over the past 4 years and the last 2 years, we can't ever forget, and we're always will be thankful for the amplification of the women's game at this level. Like you said, to have someone offer you $5 million to play in the Big Three, which I don't think she would do well at all. I mean, we're talking about some really good basketball on the men's level. I think it would just be for show at that point. And so you have to come back and question, like, what is the authenticity and the preservation of, like, the women's game? And, like, not just putting it on a platform as a caricature, but actually as something that has value.
Yeah. No, I remember this conversation from tennis. I'm a big tennis fan, too. Back in the 70s, when this hustler named Bobby Riggs challenged Billie Jean King, who was the number one women's tennis player. And he goes, even an old man, he was like 57 years old. And he goes, even an old man like me can beat the best woman. And then she mopped the floor with him. But there was a threat to France. It was like, if she lost, it would have been a lack. It would have really, the women's game would have suffered.
Right.
And she beat him. And I think that had a big role in elevating the women's game. And it was a total charade of a game. And it was just a spectacle. I don't know. $5 million. I watch big. I don't know if you ever watch the 3-on-3. I love the 3-on-3 tournament or the 3-on-3 league.
Yeah, it's fast. It's good. It's just you, like, quickness. Some of the things that, if you go back and watch some of the games of Caitlin Clark where she struggled, it was people that were able to kind of pressure and that were quicker. And so a lot of the moves where she got push-offs or visible push-offs, like the player from UConn who did a really, really, really good job on her. So you think about that, and then you kind of imagine on the men's side, someone's really, really fast and maybe a little bit taller. And so I don't really give too much value. And, you know, I, like I said, I understand what Ice Cube was trying to do, bring more attention to the game. I care more about comparing Caitlin Clark to the other women who have played basketball before, as opposed to trying to insert them into the men's game. And that's the comparative that we often get. And it was a trope of a long time ago, was like, can Maya Moore play in the league? Can Diana Taurasi play in the NBA? Like all of this time, like, we needed to really just center and focus women's sport in the WNBA, or whether it be college.
So, did you ever, when you were playing high school ball here in Chicago, ever imagine, think about how I, DeFrance, play if we're playing in the boys?
No, I never ever thought about that. For me, it was more so like, who am I playing against? That's all over the country. That's really, really, really good. Like, I grew up in the era of like Maya Moore, like someone who's doing things that I can't even imagine, like dunking a basketball, fadeaways, is fast, can shoot it, right? 6'1", like those are the things that I was trying to compare my game to. Never was I trying to compare my games to the men's game. In terms of can I play on the men's side? That just was never attainable to me. And there are some people who spent their entire grade school and part of high school, some girls basketball players playing against men, and have learned a lot. I think I remember Cappy Pondexter saying she spent a lot of her time playing against young boys. And you'll get some other athletes who are like really good at mid-range. Like, I had to figure out my mid-range because I couldn't get my shot off. So it's there are advantages of playing against more athletic, quicker, faster, stronger on the men's side, but I think you get some of that same value playing against women, especially nowadays. Yeah, like the game is faster.
So, all right, let's put Caitlin Clark into context, mm-hmm. As best you can. Her 4-year college career is done. We all agree she's not the GOAT of college basketball because she didn't win a championship. I'm with you on that. To me, you're right. I equate, ultimately, I mean, I have these conversations all the time with millennials who somehow or others want to tell me that LeBron James is greater than Michael Jordan. So I'm very familiar with this conversation, okay? So I do believe what makes Jordan so great is that he elevated his game at the moments when most people are just, like, when average people are afraid. You know what I mean? Like, those are scary moments. You got to take that big shot, you know? And like last night, Jalen Brunson elevated his game as it came down to the wire. The Bulls had no one to match him in that fourth quarter. That was greatness on Jalen Brunson's part. So put Caitlin Clark into perspective. She's not the GOAT, okay. But in terms of her impact on the game, in terms of her ability as a player and her cultural significance, go ahead.
Yeah, she'll go down as probably one of the, if not the greatest offensive player in women's basketball history. And I just said this to someone else. When you think about a lot of the people on the GOAT list, they had a lot of players who were stars as well, who were WNBA draft picks. So we think about Maya Moore's time, Shamika Holzwa's time, Candace Parker's time, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird. all those people kind of played with other stars, and Caitlin Clark was able to get her team to 2 back-to-back finals, and no one on her team. I think the one player got drafted last year, but none of those people are McDonald's All-Americans and will be WNBA future, like, all-stars. So to give her credit of what she was able to do, I put her definitely top five, top three women's greatest basketball players of all time. Most points, career assists, 3-point made, like, she was doing everything for her team, averaging almost 30, which is very hard to do. Unless you've played basketball before, you don't really understand how difficult it is to average 30. But she's also, when I went back and looked at the stats of people, she also is taking way more shots, right? But that's just in the pace and flow of what today's game is. But yeah, I'll give her a top five for me. Because there are a ton of people who have won championships and who have been on teams that had multiple stars that if they were in the system today, probably would have. You give Maya Moore and Diana Taurasi like 30 shots. you're going to get a lot of points too, right? Yeah. And the same thing you saw with Kelsey Plum in Washington when you got a lot more reps. You look a little bit better.
Yeah. No, she was given freedoms that these other women basketball players weren't. But then, as you pointed out, they had outstanding teammates, like pro-level teammates that they were playing with. So, you know, that's the pro and the con. Do you have any trace of hate for her? There's like a lot of jealousy I notice when people talk about Caitlin Clark. I try to go through life, to France, eradicating all traces of hate from. It's hard, you know what I'm saying? I'm not using you as my therapist, but it's hard to do. But I try to go through life like that. Do you go through life like that yourself? Like, do you have moments like, I was better than her, she's getting too much attention, or have you able to rid yourself of bad feelings like that?
For Caitlin Clark, I have zero. Now there are some calls that I've seen, and I've understood that she's gotten some like star preferential like treatment from the refs. But besides that, zero. I watch some of the shots that are made, and I can make those. There are tons of people who can't make those shots. And then to play with a team that is not as teammates that are not as talented. We've all been on a on a playground, and you get four other people matched up with you, and you're like, how am I going to win with this roster? Right?
Yeah.
How am I going to win with this roster? But it's a testament to like what Iowa has, and I'm going to kind of pivot what Iowa and kind of South Carolina have. What I would say is the opposite of what John Calipari does is you find the players that fit your system, and you don't necessarily find the best players. You find the players that you need to create the best team. And Iowa has been doing that for a very long time. Their coach has been around, I think this is like year 20 or something for?
No, she's been around. Bluter, or Coach Bluter. Yeah, she was around when my kids were at my oldest daughter went to Iowa. I'm a big Iowa fan.
Was she after Vivian? Like, was directly after? Is the only
yes,
person?
Yes.
She's the only person that came after Vivian?
Right, when she went to So, all right. So here's a text that a lefty sent me just this morning. This literally came this morning. Only in America can a predominantly black women's basketball team coached by a black woman go 109-3 in 3 years, have a 38-0 season, and win the national title and the main story be about a white player on the losing team, end of quote. I have so many responses to that, but I'd love to hear yours. Go ahead.
Yeah, I saw that article and then they changed the image later on in the day. It comes back to Black women don't get credit that they deserve. Donna's won two of the last three championships and probably arguably could have won the one that they lost. Just with a few minor tweaks and a few more three pointers made, but it's a testament to like the sport media is always going to care more about like clicks rather than like what information should be told and what stories should be shared. It's a discredit to the South Carolina women's basketball team, which since the start of when they played overseas their first game against Notre Dame has been the best team in women's college basketball. And to lose all five starters and still come back and go undefeated and almost beat every team by like 10, I forgot what the margin was, in every single game of this tournament, playing nine players, getting a lot of value from your freshmen, a point guard that was demoralized a year before because he wasn't being guarded. So to be able to take all of that transfers coming in, a really big pow-pow. So I want to always give credit to Don and what their staff has been able to do, and especially this year, to come to kind of take a hit that they took last year in terms of like, you know, just you don't have anyone on your team who can shoot, and to come back and be able to prove like we're one of the top 3-point shooting teams in the country. They made probably double the amount of threes that they made the season before. So I'm just really proud, but I the media will ride the Caitlin Clark wave until it runs out. It's the same thing that happened with like we saw with Sabrina Ionescu, right? Not Sabrina wasn't the best player, but also often got the most notoriety. And it happened with Paige as well from UConn before Paige got hurt. It was kind of being centered as the best player in women's college basketball. And she said it in an interview. She said, I hope we move away from glorifying and glamorizing just one player and giving room for other stars to be able to shine. And I think this season kind of started it. We had Juju from USC, right? Just a pro game, Felasia from South Carolina. We had, why am I blanking on the name? The guard from Notre Dame. I'm blanking on her name and it's going to come back up.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, Juju Watkins, I am so on a Juju Watkins bandwagon. She reminds me so much of Maya. You already mentioned Maya Moore. I just see the game. I have a friend, you have a friend too, who lives in California and went to USC. And we're already going. I'm going to fly out to Cali. I go out there all the time anyway to visit my kids. We're going to go see USC just because I want to see her play in college. So I'm so excited about her game. I love her game immensely.
Yeah. Her game is definitely it's a pro game.
So strong.
It's smooth. It's effortless. Yeah. I don't think we've seen anything like that since Maya Moore. It's just we don't have the other side of the basketball yet. And that comes with time, where really good offensive players kind of tap in into that defensive side. So if that comes, like her game is just really, really, really comparable to like Maya's. I think Maya probably had Juju has a little bit more combo moves and dribbles. That's just the era of the game that we're in. A lot of more one-on-one time because we care about kind of the isolation. More so, and then Maya played more in system. Like You can't take away, kind of coming back to our shot selection. Donna Taurasi was on record saying, "Do you think Gino would have let you shoot some shots that Caitlin Clark shoots?" And she said, "Hell no." There's just no way in their system where they were
in their system.
Yeah, they were playing pinch post. They were playing triangle. Like, they were doing a lot of more systematic offensive schemes than what we're seeing today.
Guarantee you, if Gino, the coach of UConn, had a team like you, Iowa, with one outstanding superstar player, and four, I'm not picking, if you play college ball, you have to be outstanding, okay? But within the relative scheme of things, average players, he'd be going, here would be his offense. Shoot, Caitlin, shoot. That would be his offense. Guarantee you, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it happened this year. Like, he was on record saying he had to beg Paige to shoot sometimes, because, like, in order for them to win, he needed her to score about 30, 20, something like that.
Okay, I got to ask you about that. Gino is a character. I've never asked you about him before. This guy's been around, ladies and gentlemen, for about, I don't know, 40 years. For years, his team, UConn, was the dominant team. He was a great recruiter. I mean, just going back to the 90s, he could recruit. He said something on the mic on Friday's game. I don't know if you heard it. It was because you may have had the sound down. Sometimes I have the sound down and I'm listening to music. But this time I had the sound up. And it was like, I don't know what's the matter with Paige. Paige had not been shooting the ball, or I got to get her. No, the lady said, the courtside announcer said, "I saw you yelling at Paige."
Oh yeah.
He goes, "Yeah, she's not shooting the ball." You're like, I'm like, "God damn, you just trashed your player." I'm like, what's your thoughts about that? DeFrance is a player. Would you want your coach doing that to you? Or
like, it depends on what it is. In that instance, I understood, because she doesn't take enough shots for them to win. So in his mind, he's just trying to get the best out of his player. And I used to love Gino. I think Gino, because of his teams, like I said, he recruited the best players all the time. So I knew if I watched the UConn game, I would see a lot of talent. And what we've seen now, which is also, I forgot, one of the things that has really helped grow the game, is where players are deciding to play is more diverse than it has ever been, meaning we're not just going to the UConns, the Tennessees, or Stanfords. There are many options for you to go play. And then also the ability to transfer at any moment. I know it drives coaches nuts, but it also just allows for there to be some variability of where players go, and gives an amount of, like, competitiveness per round of the NCAA tournament, gives it its more excitement. So it kind of comes back to, like, what happened, what people loved most about the men's game is at any night, any team could potentially lose. And I think we're getting to that point where we're seeing some of the teams compete at a high level. Like, seeing NC State in the Final Four is good to see, because for a long time, we used to just see a lot of number ones and number twos, really a lot of number ones, one seeds making it to the Final Four. So,
well, it kind of balances. Now we're in the portal, and I still haven't asked the Nate question. I will get to the Nate question. One of the wake up moments for me, when I was following youth basketball, when I had kids playing it, is the power of coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And I, since I never played organized basketball, I just played endless playground and 101. We just regulated our own game. There were no adults. It was just the people playing the game. It was self-regulated. Okay. You held the court if you won. That's basically the rule. The power of coaches, it was staggering, DeFrance. So you have a coach who's a recruiter, and he or she will be whispering sweet nothings in the ear of all his or her players. And then something better comes down. See ya, wouldn't want to be ya. And as a parent, you have to learn how to get your kid. I'm not so many kids so many kids to France who have just been shattered by coaches doing that, men's level and girls' level. Coaches that I like as human beings, coaches that I didn't like as human beings. But it was the coach who controlled everything. The coach controlled the recruiting process. And so the coach controlled the life of the player. I personally thought it was really unhealthy. It was, but that was like the coaches would say, Ben, that's how the world works. We're here to win. And that's the sooner these kids learn it, the better. I used to have these conversations with coaches. Now, with play, now I hear coaches sobbing. Oh, the portal. I'm like, oh, I didn't hear you complaining when you were like bringing in Bobby Joe to replace Sammy. So you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Front?
Yeah. The coaches could change at any moment. And like, we've seen coaches change in 2 days. Like, yeah, have their exit interview. Like, I'm here for the next 5 years. And then two days later, you don't even find out. You find out through the media that your coach is leaving. You're like, wait, I just committed here and now I can't go anywhere.
Yes.
And so that's, I'm happy that players have the freedom to explore options when it doesn't work. In the same breath, I tell people, like, for instance, North Carolina State, their guard who was playing really, 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 really well, the lefty, averaged like 5 points the season before and is now averaging like 17. And so it's, you have to think about, am I sitting and waiting for my time, or am I sitting duck waiting to be over recruited and then I never have my time? So you almost have to assess and have those very, and this is where coaching comes back in. Are you having candid conversations with your players and exit interviews where you're saying, if you work on A, B, and C, then I can see where I can, we can see where I can play you next season, but you have to work on A, B, and C, or you knew, like, I've given my time. Like, the upper class have now moved on, and now it's my opportunity. If not, then you like, for instance, North Carolina, this is a perfect example. North Carolina State, one of their players used to play it, started their career at South Carolina. And Don told them, like, I think you would be better fit someplace else. And that there's no love lost, but if you want to play, I think you should probably search for an opportunity outside of this program. And so the coaching is important, especially relationships are probably more important than at this time, at times, like, development. Like, can you get players to buy into your system? Can you get players to stay? Can you create an environment that's still fun and also, like, work? Because players these days have a lot of places that they can pour their attention into. Back in my day, it was like we had a stereo and then we had a smartphone that still had like T9 text. So it wasn't a lot that our coaches had to compete with for our attention. Like we were pretty much like in the gym hanging out together, as opposed to now, like even when you're in the gym, you can be other places. And so it's just a little bit harder to kind of keep their attention.
Well, I'll tell you, yesterday's guest, Stacey Davis Gates, president of the Chicago Teachers Union, but she's a, I don't know if you know, when we were done talking politics, we went to basketball because she's a huge basketball fan, and she was a point guard in high school when she played back in the 90s. So, of course, we started talking basketball at the end, and we got into it, and she said, kind of this emerging from your theme, she believes the college men's game has deteriorated. And she said, I get this from all the men in my life who are coaches, okay? And her allotted father was a great basketball player. Anyway, because she blames AAU in general, or in particular, but in general, there's just so many games that young, gifted male basketball players play that college tournaments lose their significance. It doesn't matter. It's like when you, I've seen this in, oh my God, I've seen this in Chicago. Now I'm going to sound like an old man and I don't care, DeFrance. When, before you were born, and in, well, even when you were born in the 90s, the 80s and the 90s, the 70s, to get to go downstate, a Chicago team had to win the city. Those were the best tournament games, I could tell you so many great stories. And then as soon as, and they did this, oh, progress for Chicago. They said, well, we're opening it up, so Chicago won't be its own regional. And so a Chicago team could go to Elmhurst. I don't know. We were, all of a sudden, we're driving all over the universe to watch Simeon play or to watch Whitney Young play. Or, you know, I'm like, it wasn't like in the old days, you know. I believe Chicago basketball suffered. And it's the Stacey Davis Gates principle. It's sort of like, well, there's always another game, so this one really doesn't matter. That's the Stacey Davis Gates theory. Your thoughts?
So, players played, I remember playing probably more games. Because now they instituted, like, you can only play two a day. So, like, back in my day, we played four. And I had games start at 11 p.m. There were no regulations to support students and athletes at that time. It was, at that point, it was profitability of the tournaments. Like, how many teams can we get in this tournament and how many people can play? But I do understand what do players really care about is an important question. Is it the notoriety? Is it the highlights? Or is it winning? And I think at this point on the men's side, it seems like what is the quickest way that I can get to the league? What is the quickest way that I can make money? And less so about like actually like can I win as a team? And that's just, and I honestly, like, why are they the only people that are still playing halves in basketball? I know it doesn't matter, but like it matters to me.
No, it matters to me too. It's like, what?
I don't think that's the reason that their game is kind of falling.
No, it's in there. It's there.
It's just one thing to note that they have always been the golden standard of what the model of what the game should be. And now I think that's inverted. And people are saying, like, what's missing from their game? Why aren't people tapped in like they used to be? And so that's some internal investigation that they'll have to do on their end. But, and I actually can, from the games that I watched, it was just a lot of one-on-one basketball. It was like watching James Harden play for 40 minutes, where at least in the women's game, we're still seeing some continuity of like some offensive schemes. Like everyone's trying to bring in some of the NBA schemes with flare screens and a lot of like high ball action, dribble handoffs. But at least in the women's game, it feels like an offensive flow there. But on the men's side, it's just dribble, 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 dribble. So it's just in parallel to what the NBA is. I'm sure there are some people right now that are saying like the NBA isn't what it used to be as well. Like once LeBron retires, who will be our shining star? That's what everyone's been just holding on to. Like, who will replace LeBron James? Like, who, when Steph Curry retires, like, who are the stars that we'll hold on to? Who will carry this league?
Well, it's a process. So right now, I know the names, as you do, or who they're suggesting will be. I haven't seen anyone ready, like Anthony Edwards, you know, Ja Morant, he got hurt. There's so many injuries in the pro game. It's unbelievable how many injuries there are. They got to study that because their future of their game is directly linked to keeping players healthy. And I don't think they've ever, it's like football didn't pay any attention to concussions until there was a lawsuit that forced them to do so. So maybe that's what it's going to take in the NBA. I don't know, but there's way too many injuries and they got to put their minds on that one. I think they don't, I mean, this is going to be so obvious when I say it to friends. They don't care about the players. They care about, it's a business. It goes back to the lesson that kids learn when they're an AAU team and the coach benches them because something better came along. You ever see the movie Hoop Dream where the coach tells Curtis Gates, take your jersey off and give it to him? And it was like such a devastating moment to Curtis because he always was a star. He was always, he played at Wells High School. He was an incredible, incredible high school ball player. He got to college and he was just one of the guys. And they literally told him, take your jersey off and give it to him. You know how devastating that is? They don't care about you. That's what I would teach every kid, like my grandkids. I'm here for you. Your dad's here for you. Mom's here for you. But this coach, not sure about the coach, you know? So.
That's what your coach, with your job, you can be replaced tomorrow. You can be replaced tomorrow. So the game itself has, it will always just have many, many, many transitions, and we'll see things happen and change. And I'm just looking forward to the next iteration of the game. So,
all right, here's the Nate question. DJ Nate, producer of this show, very patiently handling everything behind the scenes. No one sees him or hears him. He's a basketball fan as well. Go back in time, Friday, 1-point game. Iowa beating UConn with about 3 seconds left, 3 point something seconds left. UConn's running a play. Their center power forward sets a screen, and Iowa defender trying to get around the screen. There's a mini collision, nothing bad. They call offensive foul. Immediately, I get a text from DJ Nate. UConn was robbed. That's his text. I could go on for an hour on this topic, but I'm going to allow you the floor. Do you think that was a legitimate foul? You believe the referee should have called it? Your thoughts?
During the game, no. After reviewed, yes. Like in the flow of the game, that's never how you want an audience to like see an ending of what we would say would be a really good game, a close game. It gives the referee, the holder of like, could this have been a win for the other team instead, like it's in your hands, but it was a moving screen. So any other time throughout the game, that play would have been easily called. It was a step over with a little bit of a turn and a bump to allow her teammate to get free. But then you see the rest of the play happens and Paige is still guarded. So I'm going to say the ref made the right call. It's just unfortunate the timing of that call. And you just have to know as a ref, do you blow your whistle or do you kind of just suck it in and say, this isn't a good time for it. But I'm okay with it.
Have you ever reffed a game?
I've reffed like a high school game.
Okay. Would you have blown your whistle?
No. I wouldn't have blown.
See, okay. So here's the unfortunate thing when you have two UConn players doing commentary. Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird were doing the commentary, okay? On ESPN after it. Yeah. And they're crying because their team lost, okay? Just admit it. That's why you're crying.
Yeah, the team lost. Okay? Yeah.
Your team lost. And I'm like, you're trying to make this universal principle. You never call it in the end of the game. And this is where I'm going to throw this at you. I watch tennis.
If the ball is out.
Yeah, you're going to stop the linesman not going to make calls? Is that it? Come on. What, it's a foul or a foul?
I think you've seen some travel calls not get called. Like, the foul. And especially like illegal screens, it's not really on the ball action that everyone is just like focused on. It's more so kind of away. And so you're like, is that really a part? If the ball is not in their hand, is it a part of the action? And I'm gonna take that back. I would call it integrity of the game. Like you gotta call it. But I know if I'm a coach, I'm upset that's how we lose. But you have to tell your player. I don't think Gino was mad at the call. I think he was mad at his player.
I give this man credit because after the game, this is what a junkie. I've listened to the press coach's press conferences. But after the game, he goes, and he said this to Franz, and I was like, this is a smart coach. So what happened was the play was stopped. The ball went to Iowa. Immediately, UConn fouled. Caitlin Clark goes to the free throw line, splits the free throws, makes the first, misses the second. UConn didn't get the rebound. And so what Gino was saying was, we should have gotten that. Don't talk to me about that ref's call. We should have gotten that rebound.
Yeah, there are other play. There are other plays, and that's what every good coach will say. There are other plays that were the reason why we lost that game. And so you can't just take a glance at that moment and say like this was it. And like I don't think he was really really upset at the refs. I think he was more devastated like that's like we like we moving screen like we work on this all the time just.
Why are you moving your arm?
Why are you moving your arm? Why are you sliding? Like, yeah, yeah. And so I'm just glad that we got a really good tournament. It was from top to bottom, some really good games. We saw some new faces, some new teams. USC being back after like since the 80s. Like it's been. I'm thrilled to see what comes next.
Yeah. All right, we're almost out of time. We'll close with a little NBA talk. Maybe we'll bring you back for more NBA talk, but this is, I figured we'd do college right now. So two coach stories. One triggered by something you said about, I laugh when you said it. Like a coach will tell players, I've had editors tell me this too. Don't worry, I'm here. I'm here. You're going to be my point guard. You're going to be my center. Da, 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 da. Meanwhile, she or he is negotiating a deal behind the scenes to leave. All right. So right now, there's a vacancy at Kentucky because John Calipari moved to Arkansas. One of the names dropped is Billy Donovan. And he was asked about it, coach of the Bulls. He was asked about it last night before the Bulls game. Then he said, oh, no, I'm committed to the Bulls. I'm going to stay with the Bulls. And I'm like, oh, yeah, his lawyer's already on the phone.
Oh, Billy should take that job today. Today. He should take it today and get himself back into an environment that's a little bit more familiar. The money will still be good. I think he can reset himself. And he's probably picked up a ton from the NBA game. Tons of knowledge, tons of schemes that people probably haven't seen, and just transfer that back to college and get yourself rolling. Like, not everyone can do great in college. Like, I mean, in the NBA, it's a completely different game. So, if I were him, I would go back.
I agree. Actually, Billy,
for the Bulls, more so for the Bulls. I can't.
Who is you want now? Who? Okay, let's say Billy takes the job. He was a great college coach, ladies and gentlemen, won two championships at Florida. And his players still, I mean, if you've ever heard Joe Kim Noah talk about Billy Donovan, it's like he's talking about Mahatma Gandhi or something. He just loves the guy. All right. So who would you like to see coach the Bulls?
Who can we afford? Who can we get? Like just
well, money's no object. It's like as long as suckers like me keep buying season tickets and my guys on a bowling team.
I love Eric Spoelstra. Like he's one of my favorite coaches ever. I would take Eric in a heartbeat. I would take Eric.
He is not leaving Miami.
Oh no, he just sounded like a 10-year something wild. Yeah. Yeah, he's stuck there. Who else? I'm trying to think. I mean, you got to come in and you got to insert offense and defense. It's just the players, right? We need a new GM.
We need a new GM. All right, let's not go down that road. We'll save that for the end of the season conversation. Now we'll return to one of our favorite topics, Doc Rivers. The last time DeFrance was on the show, I was defending Doc Rivers. Local guy. I watched him play basketball. I played at Proviso East long before DeFrance was born. I watched him play at Marquette. I was always a Doc Rivers fan until he went to the NBA, and then he was with the Knicks. Forget Doc Rivers. But then once he was done with the Knicks and was a coach, I liked him, and I like him on the mic. But you called it. You said he was overrated as a coach. I still don't know why the Bucks. I can go on and on. They fired Adrian Griffin. Oh, I also like because he played for the Bulls. He was 30-13. I have the thing that I sent you when they fired him. Since then, Doc Rivers, his team has been 17-18, the same team. And I'm like, I felt Adrian got a bum deal. I don't understand how you can fire the guy with one of the best records in the game. And then Doc Rivers is kind of like, it's worse there. All right. Go, DeFrance. Doc Rivers. Floor is yours.
I've said a lot in the past 2 years about the game is offensively centered. And you hired a guy that is like a defensive team that was already okay. Now with Dame on their team, it kind of changes a little bit because he's not really defensive focused. But they were trying to figure out how can we work offensively with two stars, and Dame and Giannis. So from there, I would have picked someone that was more offensively centered. And I would like to go back to their like staff meeting and say, what were the pros of bringing on Doc Rivers? It's not like you had a relationship with these players at another team or through USA Basketball. It's not like you were very good at your job beforehand. Like you didn't do well at your last job, and that's why you left. And some of these same problems are following you to this current team. So I just need on the whiteboard. I need a photo. I know someone has taken a photo of what was in the yes column. Like because I have none. I can't think of. It's not like you were working with a younger team and needed a coach that was all about galvanizing guys together to be about one goal, one team. They won the championship like 2 years ago. Three years ago. So they have championship culture. You have all-stars. You have a great city. It's not like he's making any enhancements. And that's what we've seen.
Just so you know, to underscore my point, that money is no object. There's so much money in the NBA. That's our sports obsession. The Milwaukee Bucks are currently playing three men contracts.
Yeah.
To be coaches because they fired two. Budholzer and Adrian Griffin, and hired Doc Rivers. So there are three coaches being paid. Only one is coaching. It's madness. It's lunacy. And it makes me feel a little less bad about being an obsessive Bulls fan.
At least we stuck with – now, this is wild because we've stuck with Billy for a long time. Like, how many seasons is this?
Billy Donovan came in 2000, and right after the pandemic. He left Oklahoma right after the bubble, and then the Bulls immediately hired him. So 2021 would have been his first year. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is his fourth season.
Oh, okay. With the Bulls. Not a lot.
I don't blame Billy Donovan for the Bulls. I mean, I know that I have friends who blame Billy Donovan, but I just don't blame him for the.
No, I don't blame. There's some picks, some trades, that really
injuries.
Yeah, contract. Like we just didn't do the job in house, and that's why I said it's important that you understand what your team needs and how your construction of your team and the long run, the short run. You got to really start paying attention to that. So they figured that mix out. Only Eric Spoelstra could probably save it.
you hear that, Eric DeFrance?
Only Eric Spoelstra.
What about Dawn Staley?
Pardon me?
What about Coach Dawn Staley? How would you come coach the Bulls?
No, Dawn's not leaving. Dawn's not leaving South Carolina.
I know, but she's not, but how do you think she would do?
there's Lindsey Harden. So former Duke alum has been doing a really good job in the G League coaching.
Yes.
And so she's been, name has been offered up for a few head coaching positions. So we're seeing that. Really excited for the future. We'll get a women's coach in
my mind.
Yeah, we'll get a women's coach very soon. And all I care about is if they can do a good job.
And we run out of time. We've really gone over time, so I can't ask you about Kim Mulkey of LSU.
Oh, dang. I mean, I said it on this show a while back as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her
go listen to that conversation, ladies and gentlemen. And then I don't know if you followed the Washington Post.
That post was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have that conversation because we have run out of time. All right, DeFrantz, thank you very much. I could talk with you forever. So we'll just close down this show and bring you back real soon. All right.
See you today.
All right. That's a great DeFrantz Smart. I'm Ben Drofsky. Take care, everybody.